Father's Story of Injustice is back with its fourth episode.
I do apologize for the lapse in time from the last episode to this one. There were some very unfortunate events and situations that my family was dealing with, including some health issues. We are very excited for this episode, though, because we have a new guest, Don, on today, and he is very eager to share his story and experience with the world. And as we have expressed since the beginning, we don't have any intention of sharing the other party's identifying information. Everyone deserves to have their stories heard, but we do strongly believe in discretion, especially in this setting. So without further ado, please sit back and enjoy this episode. Gentlemen, I think it would be great to have you just have a conversation. And Don, if you want to just tell us a little bit about your current situation in regards to your children or your ex or where you're at now, whatever you want to start with.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate this opportunity to spread the word and let people know that they're not alone. I'm in my mid-40s. I have two children. I have a 10-year-old daughter and a 7-year-old son. And I'm about, I'm post 1-year divorce, but we were separated for over 3 years. And towards the end, I started to realize that something was off, that wasn't normal. And I started scratching that itch, and I discovered that I was in an extremely abusive relationship. And from that day forward, it just made me start questioning everything that I believed to be true in my life. So, and now it's led me to here.
You know, and that's one of the things that I think is such an eye-opening experience for me as well, is when I got a peek out that door of what the world looked like outside of where I had barricaded myself in my previous marriage. It's a dark place.
Yeah, it's a really dark place. There's when I was considering taking my own life while my children were still in the house, that was my aha or light bulb moment.
Yep.
It's time to call for help.
Yeah.
And you don't, when you get to that point, you don't even know where the first domino fell.
Right. It's hard to track down that path going backwards, right? Of trying to find where did I fall off?
Yeah. And you're stuck. You're stuck. You're angry. You're confused. You're sleep deprived. And you're stuck in trying to find absolutes. And then you realize how rigid you've become, and you sit back and you're like, this isn't who I am. Like, why am I acting like this?
Talk to me a little bit about how those feelings kept you. It sounds like you were kind of, you know, kept in your own little dark space. And when you started to take a look from almost like a, for me, it was, I started looking at myself, you know, they say like in the mirror, right? But I almost started just rehearsing the way I was living my life from like a third person. And that was when I truly had the experience of who I was, who I didn't want to be, and who I wanted to become. What kind of transition there happened for you where you went around the corner and found the path that you're on now?
I called a friend for help, and I said, hey, I'm in trouble. I was abusing alcohol heavily. I was blacking out. The month that I called for help, I think I drank like 12 handles of rum.
Wow.
And that was not my baseline. I didn't know how I got there. And one night, I actually got into my car. And I've never driven while intoxicated.
Yeah.
And I woke up the next morning, went to work, called a friend. I said, hey, I'm in trouble. I'm scaring the hell out of myself. I'm not acting myself. I don't know what's going on. And I feel like I'm out of control. And she told me about a place in, on the East Coast to go get help. And, I said, let's do it. And she was a doctor and she said, send me your insurance cards. So I sent her insurance cards and about 2 hours later, my phone started blowing up and I knew I'd been accepted. The next day I was on a plane and I remember listening to the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol while I was going in to get checked in.
Wow.
And so you just left the next day.
Yeah, I left the next day. She was shocked. She's like, really? And I was like, no, I'm going to die. This is my only shot. If this ends, then I'm going to die anyway, but I'm going to die fighting. I couldn't fight for my marriage anymore. So I was left to fight for myself under the guise of trying to be a better father.
Were you already separated from your wife at this point or were you still together?
We were separated. We were still living under the roof. And she had, started using some really heavy tactics, on me. And, I just came unglued. So she was picking me apart to make herself the victim.
Yep. Sure. Yeah.
So someone told me that my response was actually something called reactive abuse. I'm not super sold on that idea. Like I was pretty ruthlessly mean, but I was also like a caged animal at the time.
Yeah. When it comes to your mental health and the avenues and roads that you took, what was the biggest hurdle that you had to overcome in that mental health aspect?
What were some of my biggest challenges while I started getting help?
Yeah, in the mental health avenue.
Accepting that my marriage was over.
Yeah.
Accepting that the life that I thought I had wasn't ever really there. It was like the person I thought my wife was, that's not who she was. Those were things that I put on her and I was in ways that, she'd be a horrible person and I'd run around behind her making excuses for all of her behaviors to friends, family, strangers. I was constantly picking up the pieces in a people pleasing type way.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Real familiar. What kind of tactics did your ex use on you once? Because you were under the same roof, you went to this treatment. And when you came back, she was obviously, I'm assuming she was pretty clear that you went and did this. Did she come at you to try and break you back down and bring you back into her control?
Yes, absolutely.
How did you do that?
While I was in treatment, when you go to places like that, they try and get family involvement.
Yeah.
And she refused. She would just two or three times she would scream at my trauma counselors. And that's when they realized that something was off, like maybe it wasn't all me. And a month sat me down and they said, Rick, you need to get out of this marriage. And I said, you're not supposed to talk like that. They're like, we normally don't. But you need to get out. And she told me that I was not allowed to come home while I was in treatment. And 3 days before I left, she said, well, I've already filed for divorce. You're not allowed to come home. You're never going to see the kids again. Bye. And I was like, okay. So I sat on that for a few days and then I called her back and I said, well, I have three jobs lined up out here on the East Coast. So if we're done, I'm not coming home at all. So there's no co-parenting. There's no nothing. I have nothing to go back home to other than the kids, but I don't believe that you're going to let me see the kids, so I'm going to stay out here. And then she reluctantly said, fine, you can come home, but you need to get out as soon as possible. I said, okay. I was paying for everything.
Yeah.
I mean, everything. I have no idea what she did with her money. She did all the fun stuff, the Disneyland trips, the, you know, the stuff for the really cool pictures to post online. She paid for all of that, a lot of professional photos. But outside of that, like rent, cars, insurance, food, everything, I paid for that. And I broke my back doing it.
Yeah.
So I stuck around when I came home, and I basically stayed in the corner of my room for 2 years. And I would plank and do push-ups right next to my bed constantly. I was doing like 1,000+ push-ups a day to get the stress out.
Yeah.
And she would, I hate using some of these terms because it seems like now they're not used appropriately, but I was truly gaslit. My reality was constantly being questioned. We would have a conversation 2 days later. She's like, we never had that conversation. I never said that. You must be thinking something differently, you know, or like, are you drinking again? You know, that kind of stuff. With the alcohol, she would go out willingly and buy the alcohol. Even that was a tool for manipulation. And then when it became a problem, it's like, well, this is your problem.
Yeah.
So she would gaslight. She would stonewalling was her game. So have you ever followed Dr. Romney?
I have not.
She's a therapist, like a board certified therapist that is kind of specialized in narcissistic behavior.
Uh-huh.
Borderline personality behavior. And somebody turned me on to her, and I came across one of her videos on covert malignant female narcissists. And I listened to it. It was like a 15-minute video on YouTube. And my ex-wife was 90% of what she explained. And that was an uh-oh, like I wanted to run the second. Yep. Figured that out. I was terrified. So, I don't know if I answered your question fully because
absolutely. You had mentioned that when you were in the treatment, you were 3 days out from coming home. That was when your ex had used your children as a weapon, that, you know, she wasn't going to allow you to see them. You weren't allowed home, all those things. Was that one of the first times you can remember where she had weaponized the children?
I'm still putting some of those pieces together.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you're with these kinds of people, you have like PTSD flashbacks.
Yep.
You know, and you could be in the freaking grocery store, right? And all of a sudden you're like, why am I thinking about my ex again? And, she's really subtle. I still have a relationship with my kids, now, but I'm aware that that could change at any moment. So every time I see them, it feels like it might be the last time I ever see them. Or one of the last times I ever see them. So
scary thought to live in.
Yeah, it's not a fun place. It's currently, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. So currently I drive 1200 miles every 2 weeks. I drive for 20 hours to get 24 solid hours with my kids. I pick them up on Friday in the afternoon. We drive all night. We get home, we go to bed. We have all day Saturday. Wake up Sunday, go to church, wake up, and then after church, we hit the road, and we're going back up to mom's.
Wow, that's a lot.
In the summer, my driving's going to double. This is the court order. In the summer, it's going to double to 2,400 miles every week. Or no, I'm sorry, every month. So, and I'm not going to have a single weekend off for 3 months while they're out of school. So that will help me in court, because I think the judge bought her story hook, line, and sinker. So he gave me a seriously punitive custody order that I haven't broken.
Yep.
She's broken it multiple times.
Funny how that works, right?
Yeah. It's like she's using him. It's like, no, these rules just apply to you. I still get to do whatever I want.
Yep.
So she's got the kids believing that the last time I saw my son, I've learned not to hug them in front of her because she will physically rip them out of my arms when I'm saying. So I keep my distance, and I gave my son a hug, and he's like, "Daddy, why can't my sister and I, why don't we get to see you very much?" And I said, "Well, son," I'm like, "the court made a really bad decision, and I'm not allowed to do my own thing. I have to listen to what the court says. So for a little while, this is how it's going to be." And he's like, "Oh," he's like, "well, didn't the court also say that you have to pay mommy money and you're not paying her any money?"
Oh my gosh. He's so they're seven. Privy. Yep. They're privy to that.
He's seven.
Seven.
He won't let me cut his hair. He won't let me cut his fingernails because, "Daddy, you don't know how to do that right."
Yep.
They occasionally give me pushback about going to church because their mother doesn't want them going to church.
Yeah.
And she plays herself off as this devout Catholic, but I couldn't get her to go to Catholic church even when we were married. The only time we ever stepped foot in a church was for a wedding or our own wedding.
Unless it fits their narrative, they will do anything to avoid
the
inevitable.
But I listen to my children.
Yep.
I'm attempting to do like gentle parenting, but with boundaries.
Yep.
And I have to learn that because I never learned that when I was a kid. You know, I've raised myself pretty much since I was nine. I still had a family, but everybody was in survival mode. So I was left to fend for myself, essentially.
Grow up real quick.
Yeah. So the ways that it comes out in the alienation with my kids is real subtle. I can't talk to them freely, and my custody order states that I should be able to talk to them freely. Once I drop them off, it's maybe every third time I see them, I actually talk to them in that 2 week section between the next time I see them. Wow. And it's moms either hovering, talking over them, or rushing them through the call.
I've got plans. Mom has already designated stuff to go do. They got to hurry up because they've got places to go, things to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't have, she's disabled their tablets. I believe that they won't accept a call from me, or there's a window somewhere where it will, but she won't tell me what those time frames are. And for a year now, I've been trying to get her to open up to a committed call schedule.
Yeah.
And she won't do it. And which opens the door for 16 years. She never once did anything I asked for.
Sure. It was one-sided.
It was all one-sided. And she was only nice when she wanted something.
Yeah. Does your court order allow for those phone calls and she just doesn't abide? Or is there no set like phone call when you don't have them?
It's open-ended.
Okay.
But I should be able to, both of us are supposed to be able to contact our children basically during business hours whenever we want.
Right. Like reasonable times and everything.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they have watches that do phone calls, but she's kept the timing to 15 minutes per call and then it automatically hangs up on you.
Oh my gosh. And
only accepts calls. I just found this out my last visit. It only accepts calls during certain time frames. I won't quiz my kids.
Yeah.
But I won't. But my kids are also snitches because they get like, where did you go? What were you doing? Who were you with? What houses did you go to? She interrogates them every time they come home. So,
looking for that new narrative. She wants to find something.
They do. And she'll find something. And then it'll be 8 months before I realize that, oh, now you're using that thing against me. She'll sit on it for a long time. She's very tactful in her manipulation. But she's a child of trauma and she's broken. And, but she went in a direction where she was only going to look out for herself. You know, I mean, if it's between her and her kids, you could have the conversation with her and she'll be the most convincing, loving mother you've ever seen in your entire life. Award-winning. But the reality is she will burn her children just to fuck me over.
Yeah, that personal vendetta is a big thing with these types of people. They, it's the mentality of win at all costs.
And, yeah.
Well, your exes are absolutely the same way, specifically one of them.
Yeah, no doubt. Talk to me a little bit about, I mean, as you're seeing, I'm sure you probably have seen some physical changes in the behaviors or even the personalities of your children since, you know, in the last year or so.
I can tell you the day that I realized that that was occurring.
Yep.
So I was still living under the same roof. I had not filed for divorce yet. I came home. My daughter came out of the house crying. She was upset because mom instills punishment rules. And it's not because of bad behavior. It's because you're not acting the way that I want you to act right now. So now you're punished.
Yeah.
And my daughter came out and she sat in the back seat of the car and she was crying. And I was like, what's going on, sweetie? You know, and she's getting it all out and she's loud. And I realized my windows were down and out comes mom storm straight up. What are you crying about? You know, and gets right up in my daughter's face at the door and says, what are you crying about? My daughter ducked down in the back seat, wiped the tears from her face and turned around with a big smile on her face. Nothing, mommy. I'm just talking to daddy. Like, and watching my daughter, who was 8 years old at the time, go through that change was probably one of the most terrifying experiences out of all of it.
For me, the emotional and psychological trauma that's been imposed on my two sons is one of the things that keeps me up at night, that worries me, that strikes the fear of God in me. That has me nervous before court hearings.
Yep.
Because I've seen the amount of work that I personally have had to do on my own mental health. And the emotional scars and trauma that are being imposed on my two sons, I'm so fearful of the amount of work that they have in front of them to recoup what has been taken from them. Especially as I've talked to a handful of adults who have gone through the alienation as kids that they recognize now as adults, what they talk about, it's giving me goosebumps. It's giving me chills right now, realizing that that's what's being imposed on my children.
Yeah.
It's scary.
I feel that pain. I'm right there with you. It's especially when you walk into court because you know that you're going to have to expose yourself to them. And you know how they use that information once you leave court.
Yep.
Like, it's not necessarily the battle in court. It's the shitstorm that's going to come once you walk out of there.
It's afterwards. It's like the every court hearing for me almost is the volcano that's ready to explode that doesn't explode until we're done with this hearing. And then it explodes and then we got to get ready for another one because of what just occurred post court hearing.
Yeah. You have to do the work in your, this is where I'm at now. You have to do the work in yourself to basically become a monk. And you have to keep your mouth shut long enough for them to trip over their own words.
Yep.
We've seen that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially as things continue, you know, because it's almost like what I see for in my situation is every month, every year, I'm getting better and better in my life. I'm becoming more successful as a human being. I'm being more successful as a man. I'm being more successful as a husband, as a father. Everything's getting better and better in my life. And every time I go to a court hearing, something more shitty has happened to them. Something, you know, and it's like their downward spiral is slowly starting to happen. After every court hearing, my wife and I, we make jokes like, this can't get any crazier, right? Nope. And it does. Like another thing happens and I'm like, how do they come up with that? You know, and it's just, and I like what you said about how you almost have to become a monk, because you have to become so mentally strong.
Yeah.
Physically strong to have the wherewithal to weather this relentless catastrophic storm that's going to hit you every day. But every day I feel like, you know what? I can weather it a little bit better. I've lost a lot of the ammo that I used to give them for free. I got rid of that.
Absolutely.
And now I trick them by sending them blanks, and they're shooting blanks now, and they're missing. And what do you think needs to happen in our society or in our court system where situations like this are taken more seriously before what I feel is an epidemic that's going to transpire in our court system, and we're going to have a plethora of children who are so adversely affected that in 15, 20 years from now, you and I are going to be reading stories from therapists probably sitting around a campfire one night, you know, and reading about how this was stuff that you and I had talked about 20 years prior that needed to happen. Where do you think it needs to shift in our society or in our court system?
Both.
Yep.
I think you just foretold the future, because it's going to take 20 years before we get to where you and I wish that we were right now in our current situations. Emotional and psychological abuse needs to be recognized by the California court system.
Yes.
That as a form of abuse.
Yes.
So they don't.
Not yet.
So therefore they don't care. I have personal beliefs after this experience that the court system, the family law court system, is actually deliberately making attempts to break up families and to separate children from loving parents.
There's a lot of funding involved in that kind of stuff.
Is there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about it. When you go into the initial stuff into family court in California, you're meeting with mediators, multiple levels of mediators. Mm-hmm. You're meeting with therapists. You're meeting with potentially court appointed attorneys for your children. You're meeting these judges that have hearings of you're supposed to resolve something in 15 minutes and it's not resolved. It's continued and it's a plethora of hearings, and all that becomes funded. You know, everybody's making a dollar. That's job security. It's almost like recidivism in the jails, right? That's how those people, you know, maintain a job. They gotta keep coming back. And same thing with family court. If things could be solved, we wouldn't have any more family court judges. We wouldn't have any more court-appointed therapists. We wouldn't have any more mediators. And that's one of the things that I noticed, though, too. And in one of my situations with my oldest son, I had the mediator and the therapist both adamant that my child had no business being with his mother because of the abuse. And they were vocal about it. They told both attorneys. They told the judge. And the judge doesn't care. That's pretty scary from a professional standpoint. That, you know, what would inspire some of these therapists to want to work with some of these families to try and fix what's broken if what they say gets thrown out by the court and like it doesn't matter? What was the point of all of their education? What was the point of all of their time?
I've worked with two therapists that I think they recognize what a Goliath issue that is.
Yeah.
And they switch the story in therapy to preparing you for the worst possible outcome instead of let's fight this.
Yep.
Because I think really good therapists have already gone down those avenues and they've hit brick walls and they don't want to get on the bike again.
One of the things that's been repeated to me endlessly, that's just, it really strikes the nerve with me is, well, just remember when your sons grow up, they'll be able to make decisions on their own and they will come back to you and realize that you love them the whole entire time. Like it's supposed to, you know, it's kind of like, somebody dies and you tell them, well, they're in a better place now.
Exactly. What it's,
you know what I mean? It's like, good Lord, that doesn't, you know, this is a problem and it's not just my problem. It's not just your problem. We have a problem.
Well, and it's not guaranteed once these children grow up either, because if they're still under that manipulation by the parent or they're still living in the home as an adult, I mean, they're not going to break free and realize what they've done either. So that's the other part of it.
Yeah. It's, go ahead.
When I was in therapy, essentially what led to my story is my father was messed up, like personality disorder. There's a lot of similarities between my ex-wife and my dad. My dad was a good guy. He did the best with what he could, but he was messed up and he hurt a lot of people, before he died. And my therapist said, you essentially married your father looking for the validation from your now wife that you never got from your father.
Wow.
And when she said that, a huge light bulb went off in my head. Same. And I could see all the dots connecting. And both were extremely manipulative. Both are con artists. I could not watch the Johnny Depp trial.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
I had a really hard time with it because I instinctually could pick up on cues from the parts that I saw. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, yeah, I'm not watching this. Like this is overwhelming. It's way too much. And I feel like that's a repeat story. He lost his mind trying to please somebody that you can't please.
Yep.
You know, and there, even therapists don't agree with who was right and who was wrong. You know, but essentially from my perspective, both of them were wrong.
Yeah.
For different reasons. One had a more earnest reason and another one just had a self-fulfilling reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, those are the situations that I kind of like rack my brain about at times of like what exactly is inspiring my exes to continue to fight and claw in such a very immature and catty way, right? You know, I mean, it literally reminds me, court hearings remind me of high school gossip. But yes. And then he said this, and then I didn't really like it when he did that. And it's like, she's mad because I took her to prom and then I ended up dancing with another girl there. You know, those are the kind of scenarios that I like rack through my head of like, but I wondered like, what is it that makes these women so enthralled with the fight.
It's ego. Yeah. So, and share with you the answer that I'm holding space for in my head right now, knowing that it could change because so much has changed in this path to recovery.
Yeah.
It's ego. And if you're not doting over them, then they fulfill that void by knowing that they can hurt you. And if they see that they're hurting you, that fulfills their sense of importance or their need for a sense of importance.
Do you think that it's also not just a personal thing towards you or I, but also how it's portrayed to other people to recruit their team of cronies, you know, of like, oh, you wouldn't believe it. He's done this now. And that other, that third party's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. He's such a, I can't make this stuff up. I can't believe he did that, you know, where they're recruiting a team, right? For that self-fulfillment too.
I've learned to call that triangulation.
Yeah.
I've lost 30 year friends. I've lost some really, really close people. And I won't go chasing them. I'm not giving anybody an explanation anymore.
Yeah.
That part of me is done. I don't. Anybody that's still by my side, those are the people that are like, hey, how are you doing? You know,
as a true question, they really want to know.
As a true question. Yeah. And everybody else, I don't give a damn. You know, hey, you know, I heard you're an alcoholic. It's like, yeah, I drank like pretty toxically for quite a while. But I don't do that anymore. Oh, well, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I don't care. You can think whatever you want.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. You mentioned that earlier when we were talking about after now that you've done all this work on yourself, you've gone through, you know, the therapy and treatments and just everything to make yourself. How your ex though still sees you as that person. I mean, that's very similar in our situation and how you mentioned that these other people say, oh, you drink, you know, that's also the same story that we still hear in court. You know, how many years sober, that's the ex's go-to in court is, well, he's an alcoholic. Well, no, he's not. And, you know, it's like, they're just mad that you've changed too. You're a better person. You're not who you were yesterday or last year with them. And I think that's a big part of it too, is you are a brand new person.
And you're not with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the struggles today are my kids vent their frustrations about their mom to me. And I'm very aware of not painting her in a negative light. But I also won't allow them to not feel their feelings.
Yep.
And that's a huge struggle when I'm just trying to figure out how I'm supposed to feel.
Yep.
So it's a little bit more routine now. They generally break down within the first 24 hours that I'm with them. And then after that, everything coasts. And then right after we get out of church, they start acting up because they know that they have to go back to mom.
Yeah.
I don't want to discourage them from loving their mother. But I don't want to encourage that some of her behavior is right either.
No doubt.
That's hard.
Okay. No doubt. And it must be really hard too, where, you know, kind of like what you just said, that you have that small window of time where they break down and then everything's really good. And then you can start to see the feelings start to come out of the uneasiness and the anxiousness and the, you know, and the anxiety that they're feeling of knowing that what they have had is about ready to come to an end until the next time. Right. I always remember it was very difficult in the co-parenting of, of getting, you know, because your children are at an age where they change so fast at that age, between like 5 and like 14, I guess, you know, there's so many physical changes for them, you know, that they start to work on things. You're like, oh, you know, it's like a proud parent moment. You know, you're like, yeah, okay. You're starting to figure that out. All right. And then they go right back to where they came from, where they've learned that behavior. And it's almost like you have to start over again, and you have to rinse and repeat and rinse and repeat. And it's really tough from a mental standpoint without getting to the breaking point.
Yeah. We're not perfect as dads that are trying to navigate this. We're going to screw up.
No doubt.
You know, and having that my own perfectionist mindset, that was really hard for me to accept. But once I realized that if accepting that fact keeps me from sitting stagnant and being stuck, which is where I was when I was with my ex for so many years.
Yeah.
You know, the love bombing with my ex for the first 6 years was amazing. And we had our lives planned out, everything, this and that. We were going to have kids. We were going to travel the world with our kids. We'd already traveled the world, done all kinds of crazy things together. And then the day we got married, the morning I woke up, I knew something was off, and I swallowed it. And I said, oh no, this is just the jitters. And then my life was never the same after that day.
Oh, I got goosebumps from that one.
And everything that was promised was deliberately broken. You know, I tried to keep traveling. I had a business outside of the US for 15 years. Mm. I tried to keep traveling. And then once we had kids, it was like, you're going to leave us. What kind of dad are you? Why you're going to just leave to go have fun? Like, that's not right. Wow. And it's like, no, this is work. You knew what you signed up for.
She's been part of it,
you know, and the people pleaser in me just swallowed it and said, all right, well, I guess I'll fold that business and I'll stop traveling and doing all the things.
We'll do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I was a slave, but I was also responsible for allowing myself to become one.
Oh, that's a strong statement.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, I know exactly what you mean by that.
And that was really hard. And I was a slave because I needed other people's validation to fill those holes in my soul. And because she had love bombed me, and the first 6 years were amazing, they actually weren't now that I've woken up, but they felt amazing. I was always pining for, like, oh, well, maybe she's having a bad day. It used to be a lot better. Like, things will come around, things will change. Like, and you're always holding on to a hope that was never going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a constant, you know, you talk a lot about the realizations at weird moments and stuff like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, I tend to see a lot of that when one of my employees will come talking to me about his relationship, and I see these huge, like, red flags, you know, and they're, you know, 19, 20 years old, just starting to figure out, you know, how to, you know, put their own boots on and stuff, you know? And, I immediately just go, oh man, I've been there. I've done that. Oh man, I know where this is going. If you allowed it once, that barrier, that fence that you had up, it's gone. It's gone. It's just you allowed it to be broken down. And sure enough, like 6 months later, here it goes, you know, right down that pathway, you know? It's reaffirming though at the same time, because I realize that I'm on the right path, and you know, that's where the motivation comes in to kind of keep the nose to the grindstone, keep doing what I'm doing.
It's you have to learn to start taking small wins.
Yep.
And that becomes your fuel.
Yep.
Yeah. And not to dwell on the things that we can't change. I'm learning how to get rid of my bitterness. Like, nothing comes out of blame or bitterness or anger, like nothing. if anything, those three things have, I've allowed those three things to destroy my life. I can't put all the blame on her. I can acknowledge that I was mistreated, but I stayed there.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, like,
that's the accountability.
That's the accountability. Absolutely. And that's a really hard pill to swallow.
No doubt. Because it's self-inflicted, right?
Yeah. And you're still in victim mode, right? Like, so it's like, what do you mean it's my fault? Like, no, like I'm telling you, you know, like I haven't seen my kids for 3 weeks, you know, or like I haven't talked to them on the phone, or like, it's overwhelming. I'm going back to court next week. She wants more money.
Of course.
So, and she falsified her income. So she was given 3 weeks for a good response because I had a well thought out response to the papers she served me.
Yeah.
Some of it included showing proof that she had more than one job. She doesn't need a second job. That's just for her. She gets other people to take care of the kids and then she goes off and does whatever she wants. The night before our last court date, she sent me 15 requests for payment on that are outside of our
agreement.
As I was trying to get some sleep before I had to wake up early at 3 a.m. to drive out there to go to court. And she just starts blowing up my phone for 2 hours. And then she claimed less than half her income. So the old version of me is like, no, you need to see what she's doing wrong. The post-therapy version of me is like, hey, court, you can see I have no trouble paying child support, that I have no issue paying child support. I'm okay with that. I'm like, but things are tight, and I really need you guys to verify both of our employments accurately, because otherwise I'm not going to be able to provide for my children when I do have them. And it's not about her.
Yeah.
This is about, I'm showing up at court so that I can still have money to provide for my kids when I do have them. So I still have enough money to pay for the $600 a month fuel bills just to pick up and drop off my kids.
I do really like that approach though, and your mindset with that. It's kind of, we actually have court this week too for the same thing. But you know,
yeah,
it's his court case. We're actually learning to take a very similar approach in documents and the way he, I say argue, but not, but like spoke in court. So I appreciate that. That's kind of how you approach it too.
I wish it was there from day one, because the first round I represented myself in court. We had an 8-hour trial. I chose not to bring in witnesses because I knew she'd just drag it out. And I didn't want to put people through that. I cited family law code, everything, in my opening statement. And then I showed how it was violated. It wasn't violated because that kind of abuse isn't considered abuse. Yep. So I laid out a parental alienation case and what it was doing to my children. Mm-hmm. And she took the stand and her roommate took the stand and admitted that they were deliberately withholding the children from me, their location, where they lived. This was after they moved out. Everything. And admitted that she was only letting me see the kids 2 days a month. I had to volunteer at their school to be able to see them.
Wow.
I could have taken them, but why am I going to put the kids through that?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so, so they admitted their wrongdoing on the stand. And I thought I had a slam dunk case. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to win. And at the end, I met a judge that wouldn't look me in the face, called me a liar. told me that I was lying about my own personal life experiences. Like he was there.
Yeah.
And then he said, you're a liar. He did the opposite of all three scenarios that I asked for in court and made it my current predicament, which is damn near impossible, but I figured out a way to do it. And then I had a friend that was in court and I stood up and I turned around to walk out and he was like, no joke. Like, and you can forgive me, but he was like, dude, did they like fuck her on Tinder or something? He said that was so one-sided that the only way that he could process it in his head is that they had had some kind of romantic relationship with the judge.
Oh. The only thing they could transpire to have that type of ruling.
Yeah, I don't think that that's what happened. I think that that's just proof of how broken the courts are.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're bad. They're really bad.
So, we're constantly preparing. Tell me, you're constantly preparing for the what ifs.
Yep, at all times.
And it's exhausting.
It's the mental Olympics that I go through every day. Mm-hmm. Is just relentless. I make jokes with my wife about what are we gonna do when all this stuff goes away? Like, what are we gonna do with our time? Like, what are we gonna do with all the stuff that we get to do now? Like, what? Like, because it consumes us. My two cases it's literally created a full-time job for my wife, to help manage and navigate the treacherous waters that the California court system is.
Yeah.
And I'm very fortunate for that, because if I didn't have the situation that I have that allows my wife to go to law school, to also on the other 8 hours of her day, spend time on all my court documents, preparing for the next hearing or the next two hearings, three mm-hmm. hearings, whatever it may be at the time, I wouldn't stand a chance. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's
like a family that becomes an expert in the cancer that their loved one is dying from.
Yep.
It's I considered going, I was already bankrupt by the time she left, but I considered going into more debt to go the lawyer route. And I talk to a bunch of people and you go online and you find all these people and a bunch of men that it really didn't change the outcome, but now they're 50,000 deeper.
Yep.
Yeah. Kind of.
Things that I do is I leave the artwork in my home. I don't put my kids' stuff away. So when they leave it and they come back, it's right where they left it. I send them notes to school. The school's like, hey, why are you sending these here? And I'm like, because if I send them to their house, their mom's house, they won't get them.
Yeah.
I'm like, appreciate it. I don't want to go into a long story. I just say, because they won't get them if I send them to their mom's house.
Yep.
You know, I don't want to talk trash on her. I just like, help me.
Just help me out.
Yeah. And, I don't love bomb them and take them out to Disneyland and do all that kind of stuff. Actually, last week they had a big episode in the grocery store and I picked them both up and we left. It's like, no, we're not getting anything. Like, all of us are going to suffer on this one.
No ice cream for anybody.
Yeah, no ice cream for anybody. And it's like, well, they're like, what are we going to eat for dinner? I'm like, well, we'll make do with what we have. And they're like, this is punishment. And I'm like, kind of for all of us. I'm like, we how to work together in a team. We have to get the things that we need to get, then we can get what we want to get.
Yeah.
And both my kids were in a power struggle for attention in the grocery store, and it was like, nope, we're out, we're done.
But those are great moments as a parent that you get to have with your children that hopefully they retain and they hold on to. You know, maybe in a year from now you can make jokes about, remember that time in the grocery store? Yeah, I got you moment.
Yeah, I really appreciate that perspective. I need that kind of insight sometimes, because just having the opportunity to talk to you guys is it nobody understands.
No, they may say that they do, but once you've, you know, and that was the, you know, comment that I made earlier about, you know, we're not the only ones in this boat. And I really feel strongly that the more people we can put in the boat with us, the more people will understand, the more people that hear it will find it. It's not a coincidence that there are so many similarities to the tactics used, to the behaviors that are imposed on us, and the way that rulings in the court system have happened. It's almost like you could replace, I could walk into your case and it would be just like it would be my case, or vice versa. Yeah. And once I think we allow people to see that the coincidences are not coincidences, that they are purposeful, they are malicious, they are detrimental, that's when people start to go, okay, it's not a one-off. This is now a consistent pattern of behavior that now we need to address. And hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. Hopefully it's not the 20 years. Hopefully it's less than that. Hopefully we don't have to march you and me and our kids up in front of Congress demanding that, you know, this is the results of the broken system. We need changes now. Hopefully it's sooner than that.
I hope so. I heard that 6 states have put in parental alienation laws in their family court.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's an imprisonable offense in Australia and parts of Europe now.
Yep. I've seen that. It needs to happen here.
So I see 3 different therapists right now. I'm 4 years into recovery from this kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And I'm still actively going. So every other week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, therapy, 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 with a different therapist for a different
room.
Yeah.
A different room in that headspace. Yep.
Well, I see my own therapist that I've been seeing for years. She's a brain spotting therapist. I see a couples counselor with my girlfriend and I. We're trying to blend families.
Uh-huh.
And get in front of the ball.
Yep.
So to speak. And then I talk with my ex. Would not go to therapy for 5 years. That's when I started pushing it. I was like, 5 years before our separation, I was like, hey, we need to go talk to somebody. We need to go talk to a professional. They got tools. Let's go figure it out. And then I was like, let's go talk to a life coach. Call it a therapist, Rick. Let's go talk to a life coach. So they'll help us figure it out. They'll give us tools that we didn't get growing up. Wouldn't do it. And then she couldn't, I blocked all communication with her. It's called gray rocking, I think is the term. It's kind of like stonewalling, but you're not doing it to manipulate. You're doing it to keep your peace.
Yep.
And I just went blank for a second. So where was I?
Well, you were talking about your ex going to therapy, maybe finally.
Oh, thank you. Man, your brain just starts firing like a rocket. So she signed our daughter up for therapy. And then called me in a panic saying, hey, you need to sign up. You need to do this and this and that. And I'm like, I've been asking you for 2 years. Like, why are you doing this now? She's like, oh, well, she wrote something really horrible at school about death and dying or killing herself. And it was a big deal. And so I talked to the therapist. It's like, you know why you're calling? And it's like, well, I heard my daughter wrote something. She's like, yeah, she wrote something really disturbing at school. And I'm like, well, did you see it? She's like, well, yeah, I saw it. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. The school doesn't know anything about this.
Oh.
You know, so now I'm talking to a therapist that's already starting off on the wrong foot because she's accepted the case under false pretenses.
Mm-hmm. Being led down the wrong path immediately.
And the therapist, by the time we're 2 months in before I actually really get a chance to talk to her, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut because I've already had enough people triangulated against me.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, like she's such a great mom and this and that. And I'm like, I brought something up. I was like, hey, my kids are saying that they're getting hit in the face at home, like slapped in the face. And she's like, oh, no, there's no abuse involved. Like I've seen your children around their mother. Like I don't see any signs of an abusive household whatsoever. And I'm like, really? Because my kids were crying for an hour about it. So, and I asked questions like, did it leave a mark? Did it do this? Like anything like that? And you're scared to report it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
When you shouldn't be. So I went down that path. Nothing's going to happen because our CPS, our Child Protective Services system, is just as messed up as the courthouses.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing this therapist, and now she's starting to wrap her head around, like, well, I talked to her that she needs to go to therapy. I'm all, really? I'm like, awesome. Cool. Like, how'd that go? And she's like, your daughter doesn't have a problem. I said, I know. Her parents won't communicate. I'm all, that's the real problem. You know, my daughter's not emotional. She's emotionally upset because her parents cannot talk to each other. I'm all, I would love to talk to her, even on a superficial level, if she could just be respectful and choose not to manipulate the situation. But until she can't do that. So therefore, I've learned that I just can't talk to her.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, because like what you said, your children recognize that, and they realize that that's not a normal pattern of behavior.
When I was still angry, I've tried to forgive myself for this, but like things that I've done wrong is after I got help, but I was still kind of screwed up, I said, hey, you know, enjoy your time with the kids. You know, and she's like, what are you talking about? And I said, I have everything documented. I have our entire story written down on paper in a safe, and one day the kids will read it if they choose to. I'm like, enjoy your time with the kids. You know, do I feel that way? Yeah, I'm taking notes. I document everything. That wasn't the right thing for me to do. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think about the same thing all the time of, you know, especially as my kids talk about having seen and been given court documents and have gone over court documents and are starting to ask questions about court documents. I sit there and I wonder, like, what's going to happen when they get older and they get a hold of this massive file and read through this thing? I look at my exes and I'm like, I dare you to look at them in the straight face and say that you loved them the whole time while you did this.
Yeah.
I dare you to.
Yeah. It's when I went into court, into trial, the thing that gave me the courage to do it was that I knew it was going to be a documented public record that my kids could access at any age. So when they're old enough, and if they're 25 years old and they're like, hey, Dad, I really need to know what happened. I might not tell the story, but it's like, you know what? Here's our first court case number. Go pull the transaction. Go pull the transcripts.
Yeah.
Because she is deliberately keeping the kids from me on the stand. She expresses her hostility. She said 70% of the things that she came out of her mouth, they will know is a lie.
Wow.
Hopefully, if they're not completely like Stockholm syndromed. But
I've gone down that rabbit hole with Stockholm syndrome. It's because I see so many. My wife makes funny because I watch these crime shows at night to fall asleep. And, you know, I was, you know, watching this one, and it was about Elizabeth Smart. And, you know, it dove really deep into her Stockholm syndrome that she had with her captors. And, you know, I see so many similarities of that power and control that my exes have over my sons. And it resembles Stockholm syndrome to a T. Like, it could be a case study.
I can relate to that. You know, it's those are the things that still keep me up at night.
Yeah.
You know, and man, I've done DBT therapy. I've done trauma therapy. I've done brain spotting. I've done EMDR. I've done talk therapy, group therapy, cold therapy. I've increased my sleep. I started working out. I meditate. I go to church. These are all things that I've started doing to recover from this woman.
Wow. Yep.
Now, that's in part, it's also to recover from myself.
Yep. 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 And you're gaining that mental and physical strength that's the ultimate powerful thing that comes out of this, right? Is now who you've become, you know, and you come across as a very humble, gracious, generous, motivated individual. I could see why your kids hit that calm, cool stretch after a minute of being with you.
Yeah, if I feel myself getting dysregulated, I say, hey guys, daddy's having a rough time. I'm going to put myself in time out for a second. Like, give me 2 minutes, I'll come back. Sometimes I go down the street and I just scream.
Yeah.
And I get it all out, or I drop and I do push-ups to exhaustion. And then I get back up and I get my head in the game. I love David Goggins because, it's like, okay. And then I walk in and I'm just calm.
I'll turn you on to another one, a little Jocko Willink too.
I love him. Yeah, I read. he wrote children's stories, children's books, and I read those to my kids when they go to bed.
Oh, that's so cool. I love his mentality, and I fell in love with his mentality through his book that he wrote with Leif Babin about, you know, just taking extreme ownership. And
yeah,
it's a powerful trait to have when you're in the middle of a war that we are in.
Yes. There's a dark side to that. I read Extreme Ownership when I was still heavily codependent and didn't know it yet.
Yeah.
So accidentally or unknowingly, I used Extreme Ownership to kind of put my codependent behavior on steroids. And then through therapy, they taught me how to like taper back.
Yep.
And here's the boundaries. It's like, hey, give all you can when you have something to give, but yep. learn how to tap out when you need to re-regulate yourself. Yep. And so I reread the book post treatment, and it was a completely different story to me.
Very good. Very good. Well, Don, I really appreciate you coming on. And I hope that maybe we can do this, you know, every now and then, just to kind of get a catch up and where things are at and stuff like that. Is that something you'd be kind of willing to do with me and as a guest on this podcast?
I'd be honored. I would absolutely.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you both. This was awesome. This was a really great conversation. Both of you, I mean, just so open and vulnerable. And yeah, I agree. I think we should definitely do this again and continue sharing the stories and helping others that, you know, you mentioned in earlier communication, just to show others that they're not struggling alone. So that would be great.
Yeah, Don, thanks again.
Thank you. Maybe one of the things we can talk about is the part that gets people to this type of podcast, which is the discard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That might be a heavy topic, but
That's all right. Let's go venture down that hole.
Yeah, I think I'm in a place where it won't take me to the dark side anymore. I can talk about it without it being a super dark and gloomy episode.
Yeah. And even if it gets that way, you know, maybe it's multi-podcast that we do on that one. And, you know, the first part gets dark and gloomy and somehow we come out onto the other side. And after we've weathered the storm and we've come out to see the blue sky and what life is.
And we need to do that together because we're human beings. We're pack animals. Men especially are meant for camaraderie.
Yep.
And that whole Mad Max, like lone wolf stuff, that's for the birds. I don't even read that anymore.
Well, you see any lone wolves here in California, they all end up getting hit by a car on a highway. So they're better off sticking in their pack.
That's true.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. And it was great having you on and getting to know you a little bit better.
Absolutely. I look forward to the